Hello, and welcome to the Love Mia Vita podcast. I'm Jerry DiPiano, CEO of FemPharma. Thank you for joining me as we discuss all things women's health and wellness. Please note that this information is simply that. It's information to help you to think through your decisions. Please consult your medical practitioner to discuss your personal situation. Thank you. Hello to all of our listeners and viewers. I'm here with Dr. Catherine Sharif, who is my co-host and a frequent podcaster who also has guests appear with the two of us. And Dr. Sharif is a professor of medicine at Thomas Jefferson University, and she is also on the medical advisory board of FemPharma. FemPharma is the sponsor of the Love Mia Vita podcast. Catherine, perhaps you could share a few highlights about your background for those that may not have come to know you through your previous podcasts.
Sure. Thanks for that. I was a women's health activist before I went to medical school. And when I went to medical school, I wanted to do internal medicine and figure out how to make life better for women, because I felt like some of the conditions they have were ignored, and that women actually who have a lower status in our culture didn't have a voice, and I wanted to be that voice. And it's just been wonderful working with a women's health advocate like you.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And yes, I think we are both have a long history of women's health advocacy. If you check out my personal Facebook page, those of you that care to do so, you'll see that on my wall, we show women marching, and that's kind of where we are. So the mission is really to support you. And today, we thought we would do a little bit of a refresher on a topic that is pretty important to women at various stages and ages, and that's the topic of birth control. You think, oh, you know, I know everything there is to know about birth control, but there's actually a pretty exciting and cool history about birth control, and we want to talk a little bit about that, and then a little bit about the counseling regarding what is available, how is it accessible, to whom, what may make sense. So we're going to cover a lot of territory today. But I first thought that we would share some facts about the history of birth control and want to pay homage to Margaret Sanger, who is actually should be our hero, because Margaret Sanger was one of the pioneers that started to think about how women could be helped to control their reproductive health, and specifically decisions to bear children. And she started what is now an organization called Planned Parenthood. One of the hallmarks for Margaret Sanger was that she built this clinic in Brownsville, New York, in New York City. And it was designed to help women who wanted to control their conception for reasons that they wanted to build a career or they had completed their families. Really didn't matter what the reasons were, but it was really to give them some freedom of choice about what to do with their bodies. So we want to pay homage to Margaret Sanger. And you can learn more about this by checking out Our Bodies, Ourselves Today, where they talk about the history of birth control in the United States. It's quite fascinating. And there were some things there that I wasn't even aware of, because let's face it, by the time you and I came along, Catherine, we had access to various forms of birth control. But I'd like to ask you about, so we know birth control, we call it birth control, but what is it? I mean, how do you define birth control?
I would define it as a method to control your ability to conceive. And, you know, we may forget the big picture. We live in a bubble here in the United States. One of the most common causes of death for women, especially young women in the entire world, is maternal mortality. And women are more malnourished than men. if there's only a little bit of meat, the father in the or the husband will get that, and women will feed their children and their husbands before they feed themselves. Consequently, they have lower iron levels, and which makes them anemic. And then once they become anemic, they can become terribly anemic during pregnancy. And then when they're delivering, they can go into hemorrhagic shock, which is when you bleed and you can't even sustain a blood pressure. And that is a significant cause of maternal mortality in the world today. So the ability to control whether or not you conceive is critical.
And we know that there are some areas, even within the United States, where women are probably dying of largely preventable causes, not necessarily diseases, but just causes. They have lack of access to water, to food, to good health care. So this is not entirely relegated to third world countries. You may be surprised that there are pockets of our own country where women are suffering from some of these largely preventable issues. So, not a good statistic. We could certainly delve more into that. But when we think about conception, there are various categories for ways in which women can think about conception. We all know about the pill, right? So, the pill is an oral systemic way, but there are some other ways in which we can prevent conception. Perhaps you could
Sure.
share some of those.
Yeah, so let's start with the most basic, and that would be the barrier. So the condom is a barrier, the female condom is a barrier. When we were young, many people used the diaphragm, and the diaphragm is back in another form, but most young people don't use the diaphragm. But basically, it's a rubber or silicone that covers the cervix. So again, it's a barrier to sperm entering the cervix and the uterus. So that's the most simple way to prevent pregnancy. And of course, the birth control pill suppresses ovulation, so no eggs come, so you're not going to conceive. Other ways to do this to suppress ovulation are using something like Nexplanon, Etone, Norgestrel, which is the rods that are impregnated with this hormone placed in the arm, and that's long term, as well as, of course, the IUD. Now, the IUD, whether it has a hormone in it or not, it doesn't work by suppressing ovulation, but it creates a hostile environment for implantation and for fertilization. The IUD is the intrauterine device that is placed in the uterus, and it comes in two forms. One has the hormone levonorgestrel in it, and it creates a thick mucus. It makes it difficult for sperm to transverse the cervix and the uterus, and it creates a hostile environment for the sperm in general, and there's inflammation in the uterus. The other IUD has no hormones in it. It's the copper IUD, and basically it doesn't allow implantation because it's a foreign body that's sitting in the uterus and there's inflammation, and so a fertilized egg cannot implant.
So these are two other methods which are more long-term, long-acting. I think you talked about the implant, you talked about the IUD, and those are longer-term, longer-acting. And then we have the systemic forms of birth control too, which are the hormones.
Yes, yeah, so of course we have the birth control pills and they suppress ovulation. When you don't ovulate, there's no egg and you don't conceive. And there's many, many different kinds of birth control pills with many different components. You can also use systemic hormones to suppress ovulation with a vaginal ring. So there are two vaginal rings and they have different hormones. One of them is a ring that can be used for a year. It's not well covered by insurance yet. And then there's a hormone, medroxyprogesterone acetate, which is used as an injection every 3 months. And It was formulated to be able to give to people who may not remember to take the birth control pill and last a whole 3 months. And then you come back and get the next shot every 3 months.
So those are some of the things that we often consider birth control methods. Obviously, there are a couple of other methods of birth control. One of those is to women hear about tubal ligation. That's a more permanent way in which to deal with contraception or prevention of pregnancy. And then there's always the male version, which is vasectomy, which works actually very well.
I'll say, and there's no risk to women.
That's right. That is low risk to women, and it's actually a very simple procedure for men. So it is a pretty decent option if you know that you've completed your family, or you're not interested in having a family, and your partner happens to be a male. That may be a good option. So those are some of the broad strokes areas. There are about 20 different options that are available that are considered contraception, including natural family planning. They go from very effective, very few women per 100 women that conceive, to 20 or 30% of women that conceive. So, depending upon where you stand in terms of the risk that you wish to take in terms of conceiving, you may want to use one of the higher methods of contraception, which are like the long-acting contraceptives that we just talked about, or the systemic forms of contraception. The less effective ones are things like the natural family planning methods, because they require some precision on the part of the parties in terms of how that works. Obviously, none of these will prevent sexually transmitted diseases. So it's always advisable, if you are in an unpartnered relationship, to use condoms, have your partner use a condom, or to use other means by which to protect yourself against sexually transmitted infections, including the HIV virus. So just as a cautionary word, they will do nothing to protect you from the types of infections that can actually impair your ability to have healthy children, should you wish to do so at some point in your history. Now, when we think about which method to choose, so let's talk about the counseling part of this, because for most women, we don't want to enter into this casually. There are young women that do use birth control methods for other conditions. Those conditions can be to ameliorate pain during the menstrual cycle, for very mild endometriosis, because we know endometriosis should be addressed in a more significant way and perhaps earlier on, but they are often prescribed hormonal contraceptives. And what other conditions have you are you working on that where you use hormonal contraceptives?
Well, for example, if you need long-term contraception, you might want to consider the Nexplanon implant with the hormone etonorgestrel, or you may want to use the IUD if you know that you really do not want to conceive in a certain number of years. And these can be used for 8 or 10 years, depending on the type. So that's one thing to consider. With birth control pills, you can take them and stop next month. So if you need to have something short term, if you would prefer not to use hormones at all, you can consider the diaphragm, which works well when it's used correctly. And there's a little bit of a learning curve. And then there's also Phexxi, and that's spelled Phexxi. And it's actually a personal favorite of mine because there's no hormones in it, and it creates a hostile environment for those sperm. So it's a substance that is safe for women's bodies.
So I'm very familiar with the Phexxi product, and especially for women who are perimenopausal, it's actually referred to as a sperm immobilizer. But if you're a woman in perimenopause and you are concerned about pregnancy and you're not interested in using hormones, Phexxi could be your go-to product. And there are some other ways in which to deal with that. We talk about the O pill, which is a progestin only over-the-counter way in which to address contraception. Perhaps that is another option for women who are in perimenopause. But when we think about, so you just mentioned a couple of life stages where women might consider longer term, longer active reproductive control methodologies. And then you also mentioned some of the shorter acting versions and then systemic birth control. This really comes down to the individual, doesn't it? Because let's face it, when you talk to your OB-GYN or your gynecologist or your primary care practitioner that thinks about the whole person, like you do, Catherine, what are some of the risk factors that women need to keep in mind? Because all of these, especially the hormonal methods of birth control, do come with some associated risks. So let's talk about that for a moment.
Sure. So there's two components in the birth control pills, ethinyl estradiol, which looks like our own estradiol, except one little piece is changed. And so it's different from our own estradiol, which is our important estrogen. And what that change does is it allows the estrogen not to be broken down, the estrogen in the birth control pill, and it lasts, hangs around a lot longer. The other component in birth control pills are progestins. And what that means is that they're not progesterone, the natural progesterone that we produce in our bodies, but progestins, lookalikes to progesterone, and they have different properties. So one of the very basic things to look at is when you're thinking about what kind of contraception you want, is these drugs can, the birth control pills can increase your blood pressure. And if you have hypertension, that might be a good reason not to be on them. If you are a smoker, they can in smoking can increase your risk for having a blood clot. And being on a birth control pill can double or triple your risk of having a blood clot compared to women who aren't on the birth control pill. So if you smoke and you take the birth control pill, you're at higher risk for blood clots. And so for women with hypertension, we really think twice about using a birth control pill. For women who are smokers, I just won't prescribe it at all because of the increased risk. Another factor that increases risks of side effects with the pill are being overweight, that can give you blood clots and increase the risk of stroke. If you have migraines, the estrogen in the birth control pill may amplify that. And then maybe you would want a birth control pill that didn't have estrogen in it. So those are some of the factors.
So we know that when you are considering, if you're considering hormonal systemic birth control, these are some of the things that you need to anticipate. By the way, if you look at the package insert on any of the hormonal birth control methods, whether it's a pill or it's a transdermal, that's the patch, you will find that there are warnings that suggest what Catherine had just shared with you. So it's something that you want to discuss with your healthcare practitioner. And obviously, we encourage women to be open and frank with their healthcare practitioner. It does no good if you lie to your healthcare practitioner about smoking or drinking. He or she, mostly she's practicing OB-GYN these days, can figure out whether you have a high BMI and whether that increases your risk or. But if you have diabetes or you are on the verge of developing diabetes, those are some additional risk factors that you may want to consider. But that does not mean that you aren't a candidate for birth control, because as we illustrated earlier on, you still may have options. They may not be systemic hormonal options, but there may be other options that are quite effective. So we want to make sure that the takeaway here is that you do have control of your reproductive health, that we have a legacy from pioneer Margaret Sanger and lots of other men and women that did great research to provide some of these options. When we think about some of the contraceptive procedures, we really haven't spoken much about the contraceptive procedures, but when we think in particular about women who have had a tubal ligation, and this is a more permanent way in which to address it. These are women who are thinking about what life stage is that any life stage? This is, they're not in chemical menopause at that point.
Yes, so tubal ligation is typically done when someone, a woman has had the number of children she wants. She may be late 30s, early 40s, and says, I know I don't want to have any more children, or we don't want to have any more children, but I know that I could still get pregnant at 42, 44, 46. We see it every day. Even though the chances are so small, it still happens. And so that might be the best time for a tubal ligation.
So again, this is not putting a woman in chemical menopause. She will still continue to have her period if she's premenopausal, not to be confused with perimenopausal, but it's something that is more permanent, and it does not require her to ingest hormones or to use one of the other methods that we just described, the barrier methods. When we think about some of the other ways in which contraception is addressed, and we think about things like withdrawal, the withdrawal method.
So withdrawal doesn't have a great track record, but it may seem like a great idea at the time.
Yes, so it is high risk. It's a little bit of Russian roulette, but it may be an option that for various other religious or cultural reasons is the only option that is available, but it is an option. And then there's always the emergency contraception. So we do have a product out there that is for the morning after, and that is also not the most effective way in which to address contraception, but it is, as the name would suggest, emergency contraception, and it is available. And perhaps you want to spend a little bit of time on that. So, what is the emergency contraception method, often called morning after?
The morning after pill, right? So if you find yourself in the position where you think you have a chance of getting pregnant, you need to move very quickly because the sooner you act, the more likely you are to prevent a pregnancy. So the morning after pill, it's the general name for taking hormones, either taking several birth control pills in a pack that can make you sick and nauseous, but it'll do the job, or and prevent the pregnancy, or the over-the-counter emergency contraception that's available, which has hormones which will stop the implantation of an embryo. So good for emergencies, but not good for a way to live, going from one emergency to another.
So this is something that it is as it suggests. It's an emergency contraceptive method. If your partner was using a condom and the condom breaks, if you had some other issues personally that rendered you incapable of being in your sound mind, let us say, and you felt that there was a risk that you were pregnant. But there is relief. There is an option available to you.
Yes.
So this is some good information about how women may maintain their choices and control their reproductive health and their life. We know that after the advent of the pill, more women were able to participate in the workforce, which improved their status. They were also able to go to college and maintain their the longevity of their education including attending professional school. So the advent of these various methods of contraception really changed the way in which women had access to many opportunities. And we want women to understand that they still do have access to these options. As we just described, some are designed for women who choose not to have children for an extended period of time. These are the long-acting ones. We may want to summarize that just so women understand their choices. So if you're not interested in conceiving for, let's say, 4 or 5 years, you're in professional school. What's your best option, or what are some of your best options to consider, again, with the advice of your HCP?
Yeah, so the easiest or most obvious option that comes to mind is an IUD because it's in place and you don't have to think about taking anything for several years. Other people would prefer not to have a foreign body in the uterus, say, and can use the ring because it's, for example, one ring is 3 weeks in, 1 week out. The other ring, you can leave it in for 12 months. So those are some of the long-term options. And then other women will just say, you know what? I want to take the pill. I'll just take the pill every day.
So that systemic hormonal birth control is still available to you if you are so inclined. The over-the-counter pill is now available. You can check that out if that is something that is important to you. And then if you decide that you want something that is more permanent, there is always the tubal ligation as discussed after you've completed your family, or perhaps you made the decision that you don't want children, that is not part of your life that is important, and you and your partner decide that that makes the most sense. So lots of different options available to women, always in consultation with your healthcare practitioner about some of the risk factors for any one of these methods of birth control. Any final words and any key points that you wanted to emphasize, Catherine?
Yes, I would say that we're used to having contraceptive choices, but please don't ever forget how there used to be no contraceptive choices in this country. And it's incredibly important for women to be able to control their fertility, and which means they can control their lives.
Yes. And we talked about the health aspects of this. So reproductive health is health, which means that, as Catherine illustrated early on, when women don't have choices because they're often the caregivers and they're often the ones that make sacrifices, they're the ones that give up the rights to having food, water, the right access to clothing, the right access to other forms of healthcare because they are so busy taking care of everyone else in their families. You have to take care of yourself first. And by taking care of your health first, which is key part of that is your reproductive health, you are able to be in control and in control of your family and your family's health and their needs. That includes extended family members, because let's face it, there are those of us that still take care of our extended family members, our children, yes, but could be your parents, it could be a sibling, it could be a nephew or niece. And we need to remain healthy and in control in order to be able to do that.
Yes.
Well, thank you once again, Catherine.
Thank you, Jerry.
Until next time. Thank you for joining us on the Love Mia Vita podcast. Love Mia Vita means love my life, and that is a mantra we should all live by. Please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out our website at fempharma.com. Remember to live well and love Mia Vita.